Ian is responsible for this beautiful booklet that he gave to Kelly and gave to all of us. So thank you very much, Ian. Ian is the group director of Queen Street Community Builders, a development class and social enterprise of which own, and is responsible for developing and managing 13 acres of London South Bank. And he will talk about his work. Did a lot of work in community building, community housing, and responsible to many, many initiatives in that area. I will not read everything, but once again, this is his background. And
I'm going to have to keep the lights on for the video.
This session is videotaped, and if the light will stay on, we would like you to. Or we have, there will be an access later to all the information discussed on the web. So we keep in record. And I think that you need the light on.
This is yours?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks very much, and good morning. Let's just work out which we move. Like Avi, you see, I chose to start with a picture of the planet that we all share. If anyone's feeling jet-lagged this morning, you probably noticed it's quite a big planet. But we've all been learning something about the complex series of interacting ecosystems and organisms that either sustain or change the planet. This year we're celebrating the 200th, the bicentenary of Darwin's birth, often associated with the phrase survival of the fittest. Actually, he stresses the importance to species of being able to adapt to change and to collaborate and improvise. A couple of years ago, I went to this farm in Devon, England, where my ancestors worked, even before Charles Darwin was born. In those days, many people farmed or fished. Many died within walking distance of where they were born. Change was slow, almost imperceptible. People knew their world. And this is the South Bank in the 1890s. The industrial and agricultural revolutions had pushed and pulled people from the countryside into the cities. And raw materials were brought in by the River Thames and loaded to warehouses and factories that lined the riverside. Rich people lived elsewhere on higher ground where the air was cleaner and drier. Poor people lived amongst the smog and the smoke, and the river flooded generally, regularly. And this is the South Bank in 1951. The government had decided that this area should be used as an overspill for the city and the West End, for its offices and shops, and that it shouldn't any longer be a place where people lived. In order to encourage the private sector to move to the other side of the river, they'd located the new home of London Government, County Hall, on the other side from Parliament. And in 1951, they held a Festival of Britain. And this involved knocking down many of the houses and the warehouses and the factories in the area. The population, which had stood at 50,000 at the beginning of the 20th century, by 1970 had fallen to just 4,500. So the shops, and the schools, and similar facilities on which the community relied closed. When the private sector did begin to invest, it was in large office buildings. This is Shell International's headquarters being built early in the 1960s. And because the area was run down, Shell included in their building canteens, shops, swimming pool, a theatre, even a rifle range for their staff. Their staff commuted in via Waterloo Station in the morning, commuted out in the evening, but they stayed inside the building and never spent their money in the wider area, so the local economy effectively died. Public money was invested in building arts, building for arts organisations. This is the National Theatre, built in 1976. The South Bank Centre, which was begun to be built during the Festival of Britain. But again, the audiences largely scurried from the station to watch the show and then back again. They didn't choose to tarry in an environment that felt alien and hostile. The limited number of local residents that remained campaigned for new housing and for community facilities to be built by the government, one assumed. They were bolstered by the consumer movement and the protest movements of the 1960s. And by the 1970s, we were forming self-help groups and action groups and had shared a vision of a more mixed and balanced community. One of these action groups was the Coin Street Action Group, which focused on this area of the South Bank, 13 acres, derelict at that time. And with the help of sympathetic architects, we drew up plans for a mixed development. We weren't the only people after the site. Private developers had drawn up plans for hotels and offices, and the government held two long public inquiries and ended by giving consent to both schemes. We managed to get the support of the London government, and we set up a not-for-profit company, Coin Street Community Builders, and bought the site in 1984. This is the same site 3 years later, and you can see the riverside walkway being laid out, a new park, and the first of our housing cooperatives under construction. Gabriel's Wharf was a cheaply constructed development which allowed designer makers and restaurants to move in, and it teased the staff out of the surrounding office buildings, and so they began spending their money in the local area, and residents had somewhere to spend money locally. And that itself, the activity, then drew in people from other parts of London and indeed eventually tourists from elsewhere. In less than 2 years, this was done in 1988, Gabriel's Wharf had paid for the costs of its construction. And it then created Coin Street Community Builders with an income stream to fund some of its other aspirations. Our second housing cooperative development opened in 1994. Homes are only allocated to households in need. Collectively, the tenants are their own landlords and are responsible for managing the cooperative's properties. This is a former warehouse being refurbished for mixed uses. We opened Oxford Tower Wharf to the public in 1996. It contains restaurants, shops, design and retail workshops, and 78 flats for our third housing cooperative. With some difficulty, we had borrowed the money to undertake the OXO refurbishment. Its success, particularly this rooftop restaurant, gave us track record. It also increased the value of our land, and both of those things has made it much easier for us to borrow and to invest. This is one of 50 designer maker workshops on the site. We also have a gallery on the ground floor of OXO, which allows us to promote campaigns and design issues. This exhibition is promoting breast cancer awareness. Many others promote so-called third world issues. This is our fourth housing cooperative development. Of 59 homes, 32 are five-bedroom houses. So in a two-week period, 150 kids moved into our community. It made addressing the general issue of community facilities urgent. And this was our first response, the Coin Street Neighbourhood Centre. Incidentally, I should say we used technologies like passive ventilation using solar chimneys, solar water heating, rainwater collection, and generally, I think, you know, promoting the importance, particularly for neighbourhood buildings, of these sustainable practices. This incorporates our family and children's centre, our staff offices, and meeting, training, and conference facilities. This is the 64-place nursery for 3-month to 5-year-old children, which is part of our family and children's centre. We also run an out-of-school programme, parent support projects, healthy living initiatives, employment advice, and a range of leisure programmes. It's part of a network of children's centres supported by the UK government. It incidentally accounts for the contract there accounts for less than 5% of our overall income, the rest of which comes from commercial activities, rents, site hire, fees, and similar. Our work with Guy's and St Thomas's Hospital has been so successful that we are currently, in fact, building a clinic and in the basement for their midwives. Part of our youth programs, we also do programs for seniors. And this is Celebrating Sanctuary, an event in our festival program done in partnership with the Refugee Council. Whilst we were improving our own estate, as it were, the wider area still often was run down. And in 1990, we brought together the major businesses and employers located on the South Bank and collectively formed another not-for-profit company, South Bank Employers Group. And it brings together businesses like Shell, arts organisations, the local universities, Guy's and St Thomas's Hospital, Network Rail, 18 organisations in all. Collectively, we commissioned an urban design strategy for the area, which proposed a vision and then a menu of projects which could be implemented one by one, but together would transform the public realm. In 1995, we convened a South Bank partnership which brought together the members of that employers group with the leaderships of the two local councils, representatives from the mayor's office, and the locally elected politicians, the councillors and the two members of parliament. And the first success of this new partnership was demolishing the unpopular overhead walkways and improving the main spine route. And that opened in 1997, having been funded by a cocktail of sources. Major businesses such as Shell, Sainsbury, Independent Television, IBM and IPC were persuaded to make significant contributions in order to improve the area for their staff. We've also set up a marketing group that promoted the area, again, as with the spine route, particularly encouraging walking and use of public transport rather than cars and coaches. This is a new bus route that we designed, fundraised for, and project managed. It links Covent Garden, South Bank, Bankside, and the city, and has successfully piloted the use of hydrogen fuel cell. The improvement of the South Bank encouraged then others to invest in the area. We've played an important part in persuading local residents and politicians to support some of these developments. In particular, we campaigned for the London Eye, which we saw as key to the regeneration of the area. With the London Eye on one side and Tate Modern on the other, they both opened in the year 2000, use of the Riverside walkway increased a lot. Our estates team picked up three times as much litter that year as the previous year. That's how we measure success. By 2005, according to Visit London, the official tourism body, the South Bank had become the most visited part of London. Now, a survey of residents in 1999 identified the most wanted community facility as a public swimming pool. We designed one which incorporates an indoor leisure centre, but it's expensive, £25 million to build, and an annual cross-subsidy of £410,000 required. Our solution is to build 329 flats for sale to fund those facilities. In addition, the development includes a new headquarters and dance studios for Ron Baird Dance Company, and in return for a peppercorn rent, they will then put on a significant community dance program, a further option to encourage physical activity. The commercial housing's in a tall tower, and this has proved controversial to some. Now, I began with a picture of the Earth and commented on the complex interactions which sustain or change it. For most of us, it's too complex to understand or even to think how we might influence. In fact, even our local neighbourhoods are pretty complex in an era of rapid change, job specialisation, and global mobility. But as with our bodies, we need effective integration of all of the components that make up our neighbourhood activity, we need to address needs and balance our interventions. The great advantage of a neighbourhood is that with effective networking and prolonged care and attention, it's small enough to know, small enough to begin to work together to further shared aspirations, to see changes as a result of our interventions. As with our bodies, our communities need to be active to stay fit, to be able to improvise and to adapt to change. By having healthier communities, more active communities, then we'll probably be helping the Earth sort out its own problems. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.